CAPSI Podcast Series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Welcome to yet another episode with me, Peginkosi Moyo, on Conversations on African Philanthropy. I'm very excited to be doing this episode today. We are at the margins of the East Africa Philanthropy Network Conference taking place here in Zanzibar. And I'm joined by Lulu Mwanakilala, who is the host of this conference here in Zanzibar. Lulu, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for agreeing to having these conversations with me on Conversations on African Philanthropy. Mm-hmm. I think you and I have met several times before.
Yes.
And we have had several discussions on philanthropy, estate, but also the state of civil society. And at some point, we'll get to the work that you are doing.
Yeah.
But I wanted us to start with the role that you've played in hosting this conference.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit about what you are seeking to achieve jointly with the East Africa Philanthropy Network.
Okay. Thank you very much, Becky. As you are aware, and as you've rightly pointed out, we have been in a lot of conversations about philanthropy. We've probably have also been on a number of occasions in events similar to this, trying to bring together stakeholders from civil society, the philanthropy, philanthropic sector, and also, you know, other sectors, private sector, public sector, you know, the community as well, so that we can try and see how we can, as we say, do some systems transformation and catalyze on collective action, try to in effect, to bring solutions for Africans by Africans. We always talk about philanthropy, which is north-south, but maybe within Africa. How is it that we can capitalize on what we have in terms of philanthropy in within the continent so that it can benefit the continent? We know that there's a rich history of philanthropy within the continent that goes way many years backwards. And so how do we bring that back? How do we intensify that? And how do we transform and strengthen the systems that already exist so that we can have a very robust, a very strong philanthropic society within the continent, but also as a continent, find ways in which we can then support our own continent rather than relying heavily on the West or other continents to support the continent. And I think it's more about taking that power back and being able to really bring this idea of community giving, bring about this idea of individual giving, and even organizational giving,
yeah,
but within the continent,
yeah,
from the continent and not outside the continent, and maybe capitalize on the experience that we've had over the years working with, you know, the West and other continents in terms of philanthropy and how it works, and using experiences that we've always had within the continent.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, I think, you know, anyone looking at where we are today,
yes,
and in particular this particular conference taking place here in Zanzibar, many years ago we wouldn't have a situation where the government is actually involved and actually comes to grace the occasion.
Absolutely.
This morning, we actually had the conference opened by the first vice president of Zanzibar.
Absolutely.
What is the moment, especially for you who is a local and you are the host, what is the moment here that we should be highlighting in terms of where philanthropy has come and where it is today, to an extent that we are actually seeing this government support for these occasions?
Yeah, I mean, you've just reminded me, first of all, welcome to our beautiful land.
Thank you.
Island of Zanzibar.
Yeah. Apparently it's unique.
It's unique, but it's also recent statistics show it is the number one beach destination in the world.
Yeah.
So this is where it's at.
Yeah.
But that also leads me to the second point, which is I think we're at the cusp now of seeing real change in terms of philanthropy. It's exciting times, and it's exciting because there is a political will, as you might want to say, but we also have very conducive environment. I mean, as you said, we have 11 countries here in Zanzibar, meeting with 300 people. And, you know, a few years ago, you would not expect just to talk about and to engage in terms of philanthropy in Africa, to see how we can enhance philanthropy and giving in Africa. But we have the government, we have the private sector, we have the public sector, we have the civil society, we have the communities, the beneficiaries, all convened in one place. And I think it's very exciting times because we have all the ingredients to be able to make this happen. And I think it gives us the sort of a bit of a push to say, if not now, then when? I think this is the time. Yeah. Do we make it happen in Africa?
Yeah. Thank you. And you are the CEO of the Legal Services Facility.
Yes.
And it is in that capacity that you have co-convened this meeting with the East Africa Philanthropy Network.
Yes.
Could you tell us a bit about, you know, what the Legal Services Facility does, you know, where it comes from, how it mobilizes its resources? I see it's a huge fund. I mean, we're talking over $24 million US dollars, which is basically bigger than most of the international donors that are actually operating in the continent. And we hear very little of local institutions like this that hold so much ground, but also potential.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about the Legal Services Facility.
Okay, thank you. So the Legal Services Facility is actually a basket fund. And that is the reason why it's called a facility. It was set up as a basket fund in 2011, about 12 years now. And the idea of the fund was to be able to help communities, especially marginalized, vulnerable communities, to have access to justice. We know that statistics show that you cannot have national development or even poverty reduction without access to justice. So communities need to have their rights, to have their rights, access to rights and access to services, and in order for them to participate fully in their own development, community, local development, but also ultimately national development. So that's why the fund was set up. We operate in the whole country, in Tanzania, so mainland and Zanzibar. We also have every region and every district in both the mainland and Zanzibar within Tanzania. But we also have about over 4,000 what we call paralegals. This is a cadre that we've recruited, trained, and we support so that they can give legal aid, legal education, and do legal empowerment within the communities. And they're of the same communities, so they're able to understand the communities more. They have also been registered as NGOs themselves. So we support about over 200 NGOs. Yeah. Both in the mainland and also in Zanzibar. And we have key focus areas. Our first area is we look at access to legal aid services for all, but in particular women and girls. We know they're the most affected. The second one, we look at legal empowerment, again, for all vulnerable communities, but in particular women and girls. And the third one is we focus on creating a conducive environment. So this is in terms of laws, policies, systems, and you know, and processes that might somehow either hinder access to justice or could enhance access to justice. So we look at creating that conducive environment. And then also we look at the sustainability of the LSF, as you say, as a fund that's quite big, that supports a lot of people, but also sustainability of the whole sector in Tanzania, but also in East Africa. So the LSF is also the chair of the East and Horn of Africa Paralegal Network, which is a network of about 9 countries as well. So we support them as well. We also work with the SADC countries as well. In terms of reach, our numbers are quite high, you know, at least 7 million or up to 12 million a year in terms of the people who are reached with our legal education. In terms of direct service, over 100,000 people are given direct legal aid services. We also try to be creative and innovative in terms of our approaches, so we use a lot of we have a lot of communications, I'm sure you've seen in social media, but also in other media, in other forms of communication as well. But we also have an app, which is called Haki Yangu app. Haki Yangu in Swahili means my right. Yeah. And with that app, it has a sort of a setting similar to Uber with a GPS, where wherever you are, even right now, if you go into the app, it will tell you your nearest legal aid provider. It will ask you whether you want legal advice, assistance, you need to speak to someone, you need to see someone, and all you have questions you want to ask that can be answered immediately. Also provides a lot of resources for the paralegals so that they can enhance their ability to give legal aid. So we are, as I say, we are very lean in terms of our operations because our focus is on ensuring that funds reach the community, to the community, especially the beneficiaries. And so we work very closely with government. As you said, you know, it's very rare to see government come to these events. Actually, the first vice president, when he was being interviewed after the event, the launch event, he spent quite a bit of time talking about LSF and legal services and access to justice in Tanzania and how it has quite a huge impact in terms of reaching communities and solving issues that the communities feel that they might not be able to fill. And just last thing is that we are currently conducting quite a big campaign, a national campaign. It's called Mama Samia Legal Aid Campaign. Now, it has the president's name for a reason, because the president has endorsed it, and we're going region by region trying to resolve any issues that communities might have directly, but also give legal education as well immediately to the communities as we visit. And this is like a 3-year campaign that we're doing in partnership with ministries of constitutional and legal affairs, both in mainland and Zanzibar. But also we work again very closely with other ministries, community, gender, community gender development ministry. But we also work with the Tanzania Police Force as well, because they're the ones who ensure that there is justice at the grassroots level. We also have police gender desks at all the police stations that we support, and also the Ministry of Local Government, because a lot of the issues go to the local government, and we want there to work with existing systems, but also to be a cohesiveness in terms of the way we work so that we're able to reach the community better.
So, I mean, legal services is broad.
Yes, it's very broad.
So what are the main
trends? Access to justice,
So it would be access to justice.
The broader term, yes.
And and within that, what are the main key needs in the community? So, for example, if you were offering this service in Southern Africa or South Africa, I would probably say a lot of people would be coming to you on issues of gender-based violence, on issues of immigration and all of that. So what are those maybe top three issues that dominate the agenda for the legal services facility?
So like Southern Africa, gender-based violence is one of the highest issues, and everything to do with gender-based violence. But then we also have land. Land is number one. And inheritance. But because our inheritance laws a lot of times give a lot of room for to allow sort of violation of rights. So in terms of inheritance, we see a lot of women lose their properties, lose their land, lose their, you know, whatever it is, their entitlement. So that is where a lot of support is needed. In terms of child maintenance as well, in divorce cases, that's also quite a big issue. In terms of when we talk about, whether we talk about GBV or poverty reduction, at the center of it, it's always land ownership. Yeah. So yeah. If I don't own land, then I don't have collateral. And yeah. If I don't have collateral, then I rely on somebody else. And then therefore, I am vulnerable to GBV and other issues. It creates a situation where women and girls are quite vulnerable. We see a lot of issues with underage marriages as well, girls getting married at a very early age. And so we both advocate but also provide legal assistance so that girls are able to remain in school because, you know, our law says everybody has a right to go to school, but also we know that it's an offense to, you know, have a relationship with a girl who's under a child who's under 18. So we sometimes we have laws that are conflicting, you know. So we try and do a lot more advocacy to effect harmonization of these laws so that they're able to. The vulnerable groups, especially women and girls, are able to access their rights. Yeah. Yes, but also we focus on other key areas such as economic justice and rights as well, which is also a priority of our president, Mama Samia. Tanzania has been chosen as the lead in Africa in terms of economic justice and rights, but also gender equality, women in leadership, both civic and political leadership, women in decision making roles. We know that we're still, for most African countries, we still have a gap in terms of women being able, taking on or being able to access the leadership roles in terms of politics, but also in decision-making positions as well. Yeah. So we look at that civic education as well and civic rights as well. Yeah.
So talking about women in leadership, this is a good segue for us to talk about you because you are the CEO of the facility.
Yes.
But you also serve in several boards here that I've seen, including the Tanzania Forest Fund, as the vice chairperson of Tanzania Startups, a board member of the East African Philanthropy Network, among many.
Yes.
What have been some of those barriers that, you know, as you are working in this area, you know, performing your day-to-day duties, are always confronting you as a woman in a leadership position?
Interesting question. Just one of the key role that I play, apart from being the CEO of the Legal Services Facility, I'm also the chairperson of the Tanzania Women Lawyers Association. Okay. And that's quite an important role because, again, it goes back to the access to justice. So, and the Tanzania Women Lawyers Association represent over 300, 400 women judges, magistrates, you know, lawyers, and all sorts. And this is really important because the organization also provides legal aid to women and girls who somehow don't have their rights. So I quite enjoy being able to bring together those two as well. In terms of challenges in leadership, I would say, first of all, I have always seen myself as a leader first, not as a woman leader. Yeah. I think you will always, it's one of those things, and I'm sure you know, that you will always come across obstacles. You will always come across challenges. I remember we've had a very long conversation on this in terms of leadership. Yeah. Leadership is not easy. You have to be prepared to be a leader. You have to want to be a leader. You have to put in the work as well. having a good strategy is not good enough. You have to be able to execute that strategy well for it to succeed. You have to have, nowadays we talk about emotional intelligence. You have to be able to work well with people. You have to have the intelligence to know what is needed, when it's needed, how it's needed. You have to foresee things before they happen. You have to be visionary and inspirational. At the same time, you have to be able to motivate people. And so you take on quite a lot. And so I always feel that you have to love what you do. You have to be passionate about what you do in order to do it well. There will always be challenges, but I think people can tell when you are genuine in terms of your credibility and in terms of what you're doing. And I really strongly believe in integrity, because you cannot be a good leader without having the integrity. And your integrity speaks volume about you before you even open your mouth. And I think that is what draws people to you and opens doors for you, is how much integrity that you have.
I want to go back to the institution and marry the two.
Yes.
Because as you were talking earlier on, I mean, what I could really tell is the successes that the facility has done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what are the challenges that it has faced, you know, in implementing this good and big work?
Yeah.
And what's the next frontier for the facility?
Interesting. Very good questions. The first one, the main challenge, the major challenge, and I think this is a challenge that most organizations, and we talk about this a lot in the civic space, CSOs face, is funding. Funding is always an issue. I mean, as much as we are a basket that has always been extremely well funded, but we know that funding always comes to an end. Sometimes, you know, you're very well funded, sometimes you're not. And this is where philanthropy comes in, really.
Yeah.
We cannot always rely on the bilaterals, the multilaterals, and, you know, sometimes we also need to see individuals supporting these entities, because it is the only way the services will continue to be delivered within the communities. So if we as Africans want to see people continue to access justice, continue to get their rights, what are we doing in order to bring about the sustainability of an entity like the legal services facility? So for me, as the CEO or the leader of the entity, I always worry and think about the sustainability. How can we make this more sustainable? Yeah. So we do a lot of income generation for the organization that we work with. We encourage them to do income generation activities that can then support their entities without having to rely too much on funding and handouts. We also encourage them to seek individual giving within their community, so the influential people within their community, and the in-kind giving as well.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the organizations we work with sometimes struggle with even an office to operate. They say, oh, I can't pay rent, or I need money to build an office. And we say, work with existing structures. So you have government offices that, you know, can, because you're giving a service to the community, they can provide you a service, to a space to work from. And we've been very successful in that. A lot of our partners now work within the local government. They're given a space to operate. Yeah. But we also ask them to put their plans into the local government plans so that they can be implemented within the local government, so that they're absorbed within the local government. So then they don't have to sit and worry and say, if I don't get money, I can't go and give services.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if your concern is transport, for example, you need transport money to get to a community, maybe you can then pool funds together with the local government. So when the local government is going out into the community to give a certain service, you can also go with them so that you can give, you know, legal aid or legal assistance, legal education, and then you can come back together. So you're not worried that if I don't have this much funding, I'm not able to, you know, to provide these types of services.
Great. And so you already started going into the direction that I want us to talk about, which is the role of philanthropy.
Yes.
Especially for institutions and facilities that are currently funded by either bilaterals or by international donors. And earlier on in the session, I think one of the speakers was really emphasizing the need to transform not just, you know, the localization agenda at the recipient level, but also you know, at the level where resources are made. If we look at currently Africa and the state of the main institutions that you are supporting, what role do you see for philanthropy playing, especially given the various, I think, nuances that you have spoken to? So there's in-kind giving, there's financial resources, etc., etc. And let's talk about Tanzania and the work that you do and how you see philanthropy coming in.
I think where we need to put more effort into is making sure that people are aware. I think the awareness levels are quite low. Understanding of philanthropy is quite low in Tanzania. I'm not sure elsewhere in Africa. There has to be a lot more conversations in terms of what can be done. What are we able to do as a community? So when I go around and look at our partners that we fund, we support, and have conversations, I try and talk about how the community can get involved and say, this service is yours. This service benefits the community. How can we as a community get involved so that the service that is being given is more sustainable and it does not have to rely on anyone else? Because, you know, it's not sustainable, you know, and if we want to be able to continue to access these services, maybe there's something we can do to make sure that, so as a community, as individuals, as, you know, the influential people within communities, and it doesn't have, as you said, it doesn't have to be financial. It could be in-kind sort of contribution that is given so that these services can continue to be to operate within the community. So more of, and a lot of times we have conversations, we as the people who are in this sort of in this space, we talk about it a lot, but do we then talk to the community at large so that they understand the conversations we are having? They know the direction that we are going, and they also start to analyze, synthesize, and think, and, you know, look at things from a completely different perspective, and maybe start to think of how they can get involved, or how they can persuade people that they know can get involved, should get involved. And we do a lot of giving, as we say, in Africa for so many different things. In Tanzania, weddings, people give a lot of money, of money.
Yeah.
You know, up to like $40,000 for a wedding. I mean, and it's for one day. And you know, when it's like one day, you can imagine if we turn that around and say, and it's usually people contributing a little bit here and there, and then they raise quite a lot of money, you know. And you can think about the members of parliament have a lot of power in terms of getting people to come together and raise funds for certain activities. The influential individuals or the celebrities that we have, they also have a lot of power in doing that. So what if we start doing that for these causes? Yeah. What if we look at it in terms of how can we sustainably raise funds or come together? And I know there are people who want to give, but they don't know where to give and or how to give.
Yeah.
And how do we make it like have systems where giving can, you know, strengthening, transformation systems that people can give through those systems and see what the money is going to do. You know, look at innovation. We do very well. And Tanzania is one of the countries that is doing extremely well right now when it comes to startups, innovation space. A lot of investment comes into Tanzania, just as it goes to South Africa, Nigeria, and some other country. Tanzania is also, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania is also one of those countries. If we can get so much investment for innovation and technology, how can we also find ways where we also invest in services for the community as well.
So, I mean, essentially, funerals also attract.
Funerals also attract a lot of money.
So basically, how do we reframe our programs in such a way that they are as attractive as funerals or weddings?
Yeah.
So that they can get this fund. I think that's some work that we need to do.
Yes.
So as we learned, Lulu, your background is in legal studies.
Yes.
But let's just talk a bit about. Where did it start? Who is Lulu? We've been talking to the CEO, but now we want to talk to Lulu, the individual.
Who is Lulu? So I was born in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. I grew up in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. I went to school in Dar es Salaam up to a certain middle school where I lived in Botswana for a few years, about 5 years. And then I came back to Tanzania, continued with my higher education, high school, went to University of Dar es Salaam, studied law, and then practiced law for a very short time. And then I went to do my master's degree in the UK, but also lived and worked in the UK, and did quite a number of work within the charitable sector within the UK, but also worked with government as well at some point.
Yeah.
And then I came back, decided to come back to Tanzania because I wanted to use the skills, experience and knowledge that I'd gained with everywhere else I'd been to come and help and support, do whatever I can within the community. But I've also worked in development for over 20 years.
Yeah.
I've worked in the public sector, in the public health sector for many years. At some point, I was known as a public health expert. I've never studied public health, but that was a sector that I worked in for a very long time as well, with a number of international organizations, entities, both here in Tanzania and elsewhere. Yeah. I think that's mainly what I can say, but I'm also very passionate about what I do. I love working with the community, specifically women and girls, has always been my focus. And that's the main thing.
And so when would you say you had your first encounter with this big word or the big field of philanthropy?
Actually, when I started working with the Legal Services Facility, we had just started a partnership with EAPN.
Yeah.
And then we started thinking about around philanthropy. We started working really closely. So as much as we're a member of EAPN, but we then thought it would be beneficial for us to work closely with EAPN. So we have had a presence in Kenya as well, in Nairobi, and every time we go to Nairobi, we always meet with EAPN and then see how we can work with other partners. I've also worked with APN as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it then opened up the sort of the views in terms of philanthropy and global giving and, you know, global philanthropic efforts that are going on, both individual and institutional. So we started looking at it now as an area. We started then looking at the work that we're doing at the Legal Services Facility with all the partners and all the organizations that we work with. And we thought, well, it makes sense. Moving from us giving funding to community giving and community encouraging communities to support initiatives within their communities as well. And I guess what I think for me is really important for us to be in terms of our involvement with EAPN, but also involvement with philanthropy in general, is that the learnings and experiences that we get from other like-minded organizations, partners who are already doing what we're doing or even more than what we're doing in this space, from other countries, other continents and other, you know, communities. It's very important for us because we get to learn, we see best practices, and it also opens our thinking in terms of how we can make our work better.
Yeah.
Leading to your, adding on to your previous question, where is LSF going? And I think moving towards being more of an overseer of other philanthropic work within the Tanzania and other places.
Great. Lulu, thank you. Thank you so much for firstly hosting the conference.
Yes.
We're looking forward to the outcomes of this conference. Mm-hmm. Secondly, thank you so much for talking to us.
Yes.
I know you and I still need to talk about that PhD. I'm just putting it in there.
How many years now?
So we need to talk
remember
about that
we
PhD.
Started talking about it in Arusha,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes,
so
yes,
so we need to get it
yes,
done.
Yes. So I can also be called professor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's do that. So I really want to thank you for making the time.
Well, thank you.
I think we will end the conversation here. And
thank
at some
you.
Point in the near future, we might catch up again with you.
Absolutely.
Just to see where LSF has gone.
Yes, I would love to do that.
That was Lulu Ngwanakilala, the current CEO of the Legal Services Facility and the chairperson of the Tanzania Women Lawyers Association. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the CAPSI podcast series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.